Tomorrow.
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding. Today, we are talking about Cymbeline.
What up?
In case you didn't read the play, because it's a weird one that almost no one reads, but you should, it's great. Here is some Shakespeare abridged. King Cymbeline has banished this guy called Posthumus Leonidas because he married his daughter Imogen. Imogen loves Posthumus and had married him for love, but she's supposed to be getting married to Cloten, who's the queen's son by another father, aka Cymbeline's stepson. She and Posthumus are like saying their goodbyes before he has to run away to Italy because he's been banished, and she gives him a ring and he gives her a bracelet, and then he runs away. The queen, we learn, is plotting against Cymbeline. She is lining up her son to be king. She gives poison to Pisanio, who is Posthumus's servant, and says, oh, this is some nice medicine, so if anybody's having like a rough night, you could give them this draft and it'll totally make them feel better. And he was like, all right, whatever. And then he goes out and she goes, ha ha, I gave you poison. And he doesn't know, but if he takes it and dies, then that'll be one less person helping Posthumus get back with Imogen. And then, behind her, the doctor who had given her the poison is like, haha, I fooled you, because it's not real poison, because I don't trust you with poison, queen, I think you're evil. So I gave you a draft that, when taken, will make a sleep similar to death, but not actually death. And then they'll wake up totally fine, just like in Romeo and Juliet. So that's that plot point. Posthumus runs away to Italy to stay with a friend, Filario. And there's this guy, Iachimo, who's bragging about how all women are susceptible to wooing, and they're all unchaste. And, of course, Posthumus is like, well, not my girlfriend, wife. And he's like, all right, I'll bet you on it. Here's some money, and in exchange, you have to give me your ring if I win and can, like, prove that she's unchaste. And Posthumus is like, sure, bro, bring it. So Iachimo travels to meet Imogen, and then he tells her that Posthumus has been, like, super happy in Italy and partying and sleeping with whores and all this stuff, and Imogen is, like, so distraught and is crying, and he's like, well, you know, I just wanted to tell you because it was weighing on my conscience, but the best thing you can do is get revenge on him. And she goes, oh, how could I do that? And he goes, I don't know, what if you, like, cheated right back? Like, I don't know, with me. And she goes, aha, you're not telling the truth. You just want to sleep with me. I'm not falling for that. Forget that. And he's like, and quickly thinks. He's like, oh, you're right. You caught me. I just wanted to make sure that you were chaste. And now I can see that you deserve Posthumus. By the way, I have one favor, though. Can I have some valuables I'm bringing back to the Rome for the emperor, and I'm afraid they'll be stolen. Can I keep them in a big trunk in your room tonight? And she's like, of course, that sounds normal. And then that night, the trunk pops open, and Iachimo, who was hidden inside of it, pops out, and Imogen is there asleep. And Iachimo takes the bracelet the Posthumus gave her off of her wrist and steals it, and he memorizes some of the decorations in the room and memorizes a mole under her breast to prove that he, quote-unquote, slept with her, even though he really didn't. And then the next day, Cloten, who we see is a total oaf, and even his servants are making fun of him. In almost every scene, there's one servant who's just like, oh, yeah, you're the best, Cloten, you're so cool. And then the other servant's like, yeah, if cool was, like, the chess club, but better. And so we see that Cloten's an oaf, and he comes up to Imogen, and he's like, he bought some mariachis or whatever to play music for her, and she's not into it. And then she straight up tells him, look, dude, I don't like you, and worse than that, I hate you, so please stop trying to woo me. And, by the way, where's my bracelet? Back in Italy, Posthumus is convinced by Iachimo that Imogen slept with him because he knows about the mole and all the decorations in her room. So he sends a letter to Pisanio to get revenge on Imogen. Now, Pisanio delivers the letter to Imogen, and he has a letter for himself. The letter to Imogen says that Posthumus wants to meet her at a hill near Milford Haven. And the letter that Pisanio has says, hey, when she goes out to that remote part of that hill, kill her. Pisanio takes her to the hill, but when he gets there, he says, look, Posthumus has clearly been tricked and thinks that you cheated on him and told me to kill you, but I'm not going to do that. Why don't you go hide out in Milford Haven for a while until all this thing blows over and I can figure out what to do? Here, I brought you these boy clothes. You should go pretend to be a boy and just go hang out over at that town over there. It's really, really short distance to get there. And she goes, she's like, so sad and so upset and can't believe her husband would do this. But she's like, okay, sounds like a plan. My name's Fidel now. I'm a boy. And she gets lost. She can't find the city, and she ends up at this cave where Belarius is a new character, who is a wrongly banished lord, and the two boys he calls sons, Guiderius and Arviragus, live. Now, Belarius was banished a long time ago, and he was upset, so he decided to steal the two young sons of Cymbeline. So these boys are actually Cymbeline's sons, and therefore Imogen's older brothers. But they don't know that. Only Belarius knows that. And they all have forest names, like Morgan, Polydor, and Codwall, but no one calls them that, really, so just don't even worry about that. So they see starving little boy Imogen eating all their food, and they're like, "Oh, he's so cute." And she says her name is Fidel, and they're like, "You can stay with us. It'll be great." Clotin at the castle finds out that she's missing and makes Bassanio, who is now back from Milford Haven, to go get him the clothes of Posthumus so he can go kill Posthumus while dressed as him and ravage Imogen in her dead husband's clothing, because also one time she said the garments of Posthumus are more worthy than Clotin himself. Men. Imogen wakes up feeling ill at the cave, and she sends Belarius, Guiderius, and Arviragus off to hunt, and she takes the quote-unquote medicine given to her by Pisanio. Again, this is the medicine that'll make her go to sleep like she is dead. So the boys are all about to go to hunt, but then Clotin shows up and is like, "Hey, blah," and just starts, you know, insulting them as he's wont to do when he walks into a room. And he gets his head cut off because he's not a good fighter or good at most things. And Belarius knows who he is and knows that he's the prince and is like, "Look, we got to get rid of the head, because if they find out we killed the prince, they're going to come after us. That's no good. The sentence is death." And then Arviragus goes into the cave and comes out with what he thinks is Fidel/Imogen's dead body. And they're like, "Oh my god, I can't believe he died. Let's go get some flowers and we'll bury him, and we'll bury the rest of the body of the prince as well, Clotin." Imogen wakes up alone with a headless body who's in her husband's clothes and has the most beautiful speech where she is lamenting her dead husband and comparing him to all these Greek gods and all this stuff. And she, at the end of it, gets so angry and blames Pisanio, who she thinks consorted with Clotin to kill her and poison her. And now her husband is dead. And she ends up painting her face with the blood of the body and going, "I'm just gonna kill everyone." And then these soldiers from Rome find her and they're like, "Hey, what's going on, little boy?" And he's like, sad. And they help him bury the body of, he says it's his, like, master, and they're like, "You can come serve us now, we'll take care of you," because they're all going to war because Britain didn't pay the money that they owed Rome back in the day when Caesar was in power, and now Augustus Caesar is demanding that money. So Cymbeline and Rome are going to war. So then Posthumus is with the Roman army because he's been living in Italy, but he switches into British peasant clothes to fight for the side of Britain because that's who he feels loyal to, but also because he has a death wish, because he feels so bad that Imogen is dead, because Bassanio sent him a bloody handkerchief and said, "I did kill Imogen." And so he's basically just trying to die the whole time. But the British end up winning the war with the help of Belarius and his sons, and this weird peasant that showed up out of nowhere is, like, really good at war and stuff, who's Posthumus. And so when they're winning, Posthumus goes, "Oh, well, now we're winning. I'll become a Roman again, so I get captured and executed." And while he's in prison, he gets a vision from Zeus, where Zeus tells all of his ancestors, "Don't worry, I'm going to take care of your son, Posthumus." And he wakes up, and he's like, "I guess I'm not supposed to die, ... Then the next day, Cymbeline has all the prisoners brought out before him, including Posthumus, who's in disguise as Roman, and Imogen, who's been hanging out with the Romans, now in disguise as a boy. Now, the soldier that took in Imogen is like, "Hey, I don't care what you do to the rest of us, but you gotta spare this little boy. He's really nice, and we all like him." And the king is like, "I feel familial to him, too. I will spare him. Little boy, name anything you want, and I'll give it to you." And they go off and have a private conference, and then they come back, and Imogen, as Fidel, calls out Yakumo and is like, hey, did you lie about sleeping with Imogen? And Yakumo, like, confesses everything, and Posthumus is, like, about to attack him and kill him, and Imogen runs up to Posthumus and is like, oh my god, you're alive, and he's like, oh my god, are you Imogen? And she's like, yeah, it's me, hey, what's up? And they're reunited. Then the queen is announced as dead. She had been really sick, and the doctor had been taking care of her, but he comes out and says she's dead over the worry for her missing son, which we still don't know what happened to him. And then Guiderius admits to killing Cloten. And so the king says, oh, I wish you hadn't said that. You did great in our war, but now you have to be executed because that's the law. And then Valerius is like, wait, don't, because I'm the lord that was banished a long time ago, and sorry about it, but I stole your two sons, but here they are, and they're alive. And then they're all reunited, and Cymbeline makes peace with Rome, and they all live happily ever after. We have a guest today. I'm a little concerned that she's here, especially because she brought me a drink, but we'll see how the night pans out. But our guest tonight is the Queen.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Do you have a name, Queen?
Actually, it's actually last name business, first name none of you.
Oh, yes. Lovely. Yes. Lovely. I have to say, this is one of my favorites that we've read in a long time.
First of all, cannot believe that. Thought you were going to hate this play. When you texted me last week being like, this is really great, I was shocked. I was surprised because I consider this play the Mad Libs of Shakespeare, in that he uses every single one of his tropes as fast as he can. Because there's, like, evil queen plotting. There's the king who's, like, second to the woman. There's a girl who married for love instead of duty. There's the guy
girls dressed as boys.
Yeah, the girl dressed as boys, the guy who wants to marry her, the princes that don't know that they're royalty who are out there, and then there's, like, a war.
Yeah.
It's the
best. And I think that's why I enjoyed it. It's very easy to pick up what the plot is and what's going on and understand it. And it also feels as though it's a spoof of Shakespeare. And because I was so outside of and kind of not enjoying Shakespeare for so long, if you were going to spoof Shakespeare, you would just do Cymbeline.
Yeah.
But you do it at a level of 110% commitment.
Right.
And it would come off as we're making fun of Shakespeare, which is amazing and so much fun to read. And everything, there are plots that go nowhere, and there are monologues that start at one level and escalate so quickly that it's ridiculous, but highly enjoyable to read.
Right.
Oh, yes. There's a trope you forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Which is when the heroine dies off stage at the end.
Got it. Right.
Right.
Which is, that's what happened.
To you.
To me.
Right, of course.
I'm not sure you're the heroine.
I don't think I understand you totally correctly, but I'll go with it for now, but I'm just saying, am I basically, what was that lovely girl's name? The one who drowned? Ophelia. She and I are essentially the same.
Got it.
Yeah. No, and we were pen pals, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We had this whole program. It was like Northern Europe, write to each other, me and Ophelia. I used to give all these tips on how to arrange flowers. It was lovely. Yeah.
Very nice.
What happened to her?
Is that why you get so many flowers in the beginning of this play?
It's, yeah, I'm obsessed. Oh, my garden. Amazing.
I don't really have that many questions because it is very, even though the plot is incredibly convoluted, it's fairly simple to pick up on. The raving madness from Icamo?
Call it Yakumo, but I don't really know.
That's, yeah, Yakumo.
Yakumo.
I saw him in the hallway.
Right. Oh, nice. That
smells
scene
nice, right?
Between
I put him in that trunk myself, I'll tell you that.
How'd you
folded him up like a napkin I did.
His raving madness, or whatever, when he's talking with Imogen, and he's saying all these things, and she's just going, are you feeling okay? I'm sorry, are you well? Do you need some water? That is how people feel about Shakespeare. That is me.
Funny.
That is me sitting in a production of R&J going, is everyone quite sane right now? Because I really don't think that they are, and I don't understand what's going on. So
that scene in particular, too, I think is one of those ones we need to see done. Because I think what's happening is he's hitting on her hard. And she's like, are you feeling okay? Because he's, like, getting really close. And
oh,
like,
right.
I mean, like, all these men always trying to, like,
go to Italy. And he's, like, draping his little finger on her shoulder. Sure. She's like, you alright?
I would love to do a production of this.
Yeah.
I would direct it, even, because it's so fun.
I'm so glad.
And there's just great lines in it as well, such as, "Sir, as I told you always, her beauty and her brain go not together."
Which is exactly the opposite of Imogen.
Right?
He's just trying to please his lord. But also, that's such a great line.
That's such a good dig.
Oh, I wrote one down too. I labeled it Myrn. It was Imogen and Clotten. He was like talking to her handmaid and being like, "Listen, what if I gave you this gold? Would you let me in there so I could just like talk to her?" And then right then, Imogen comes out and he's like, "Good morrow, fairest sister, your sweet hand." And she goes, "Good morrow, sir. You lay out too much pains for purchasing but trouble. The thanks I give is telling you that I am poor of thanks and scarce can spare them."
What an ingrate. I know you must like her, but good heavens. She doesn't do any work.
Oh!
She doesn't do anything.
No.
She marries whomever.
Yeah, Posthumus. He's basically, like, he was a poor boy whose parents died through childbirth in the war, and the king took in and raises his own, sort of like Theon Greyjoy.
Right, and you see how it worked for him.
Yeah, Theon Greyjoy did not end well. Posthumus was a little luckier.
They have right. HBO in the afterlife, by the way.
I always wondered, is it free?
No, because I am in purgatory.
Oh.
Mm.
Oh, shoot.
So it's like minimal charge.
Okay.
But...
Right.
And the reception's not fantastic. Mm, so it's like I have been able to make it out.
That's good.
But yeah, I just have to say, you know, she doesn't do anything. And she really doesn't seem that smart to me.
Oh.
I feel like she seems to be a bit of a wet blanket. And if I were her, she could have pulled off this whole scheme and not actually ever told anyone that she did sleep with Iacomo.
That's true.
She could have had sex with him.
Yeah.
And then been like, "It was a lie the whole time. I'm Imogen. Look. Also, by the way, if she's been chased, how does Posthumus know that she's got a mole under her breast?"
Real talk.
So she's whoring it up in my house.
Okay, but they were married.
They hadn't had sex yet. They hadn't consummated.
They don't know that.
Yes, it's part of the dialogue at the opening of the play.
Oh, snap. I didn't know that.
I was hiding in the garden next door and I heard it.
Oh, man.
You are in the garden at the beginning and they're talking about the fact that they've not had a wedding night, but he has to leave.
Posthumus peeked at her boob before then.
Yeah. So just because she's been flashing her tits in my house doesn't mean that I would necessarily call her chaste.
Mm. Interesting. Interesting point.
There are also some good sex joke lines.
Yeah.
If you can penetrate her with your fingering, so we'll try with tongue too. If none will do, let her remain.
That's him talking to musicians. I almost posted that on Facebook. I know. Like Shakespeare talking about musicians.
I know he's talking about musicians.
No, I know it's a sex show.
But
for sure.
It's
my poor son.
He was so horny.
He was. Oh, the he number of times so I caught him on a cushion on the floor in the living room. Poor little dear. Just
going away at it.
Just making his way to Mecca, for all we knew. Just getting there 1 inch at a time. Oh, my sweet love.
Who did you sleep with to make Clotten? Was he not smart, but very good looking?
Weird. Have you ever met a guy? I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he talks all the time. His name's Polonius.
Yeah, I know him.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I met him at the Y. How'd you meet him?
He taught me Latin.
No, oh, that would, he'd be good at that. Yeah, he'd be good at that.
Polonius, of course, who is the father of Ophelia in Hamlet.
Yeah. No, he was a right blowhard, but so am I, if you know what I mean.
So you and Ophelia being pen pals.
Yeah, that was a bit of a setup, to be honest. When I said it was a program, it meant I did a dad.
I would kind of agree with you a little bit that Imogen might not be the brightest bulb in the bunch. You did kind of answer my question in the summary. Okay, here's how I was reading it.
Mm.
There's one letter that Pisanio reads and then lets Imogen read that says, "I'm going to be at Milford Haven, but murder my wife and then come meet me there." which I guess is, there's two letters, but I was just thinking she read this letter about please murder my wife, and all she got out of it was that her husband was going to be at Milford Haven, and I thought this chick is real dumb.
Do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. Yeah. I actually back you up on that point.
Yeah.
She didn't, her letter didn't say that he was going to murder her.
Right, I didn't realize there were two letters.
Yeah, there were two letters.
I've seen her trip over her shoes around the castle.
And they didn't have laces back then.
No, she's just a nightmare. I don't know. She's the real reason I regretted marrying Cymbeline, to be honest. Yeah. He was all right, and his daughter just kind of holed up in her room, just doing nothing, looking at her tapestries and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, she had some dope tapestries.
They were nice.
Well,
they were
the nice. Curtains. My only other question, really, is the name Morgan, I was taking to be Morgan the Wizard.
Mm.
You don't know about Morgan the Wizard?
Mm, Morgan Le Fay.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's a woman.
It does, well...
This a boy.
Yeah, but...
You just think, ladies have no power. Well, let me tell you, I was so close to murdering Cymbeline. And that little twat of a daughter. But my son is a dumbass. May he rest in peace.
Mm-hmm. So you loved him, but you understood that he was...
Cotton?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, you have to. I'd carried him that long, and then 2 weeks longer, and he was my angel boy, but he was also no angel, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see things, you see the cat torturing, right. You see the small fires, you hear the excuses, and then you just think, that's my little love.
Mm.
And you just have to say, is he going to aggressively rape a woman in her husband's clothes? Yeah, but he has learned to do like a proper flush after he's gone to the toilet, so...
You win some, you lose some.
It's 6-1, isn't it?
That is one of my favorite monologues in the show.
Which one?
The one where he starts out just going, well, she's going to be there. I'll just go meet with her. But maybe I'll dress in her husband's clothes. But maybe I'll rape her, murder her husband in front of her face, then murder her. That was the moment I went, that escalated quickly.
Yeah.
He's got no restraint.
No.
This play also feels like what every improvised Shakespeare play feels like. It's just like...
a soap opera?
Yeah, it just like keeps getting weirder. And resolves somehow immediately at the end.
Yes. So what was your plan? I'd love to delve deeper into the poisoning plan. You were just going to take over the kingdom?
Well, I'd been working on... with Cornelius, darling Cornelius. My herbs teacher. He'd been teaching me how to make things... all sorts of things. So if you ever need a poultice for anything, let your girl know and I've got you. But yeah, so I've been learning how to, I was going to poison some cats. I was going to poison some squirrels, kind of work my way up, and then accidentally poison the king. And I sort of figured that if I honestly left some kind of banana on the floor with poison on it, Imogen would eventually trip along and eat it. Because she's got no sense. So that was my plan, poison the king intentionally, and then just leave some, like, a poisoned cake somewhere in the castle and just wait for Imogen to fall face first into it.
Like Peter Pan.
Yes, that was actually where I got my inspiration.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a rip in the space-time continuum to where we were. So I read Peter Pan. My plan was mostly just have the king sit still long enough, because I'm sure you noticed, but he tends to be a bit... he tends to get the vapors a little bit and sort of scamper about worrying about things. Mm-hmm. And so I really decided all it would take would be one well-timed cup of tea and say, darling, sit down, just have a cup of tea and we'll talk it out. Or fall around, but have a cup of tea first.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a matter of time, really. Because is it so wrong if me wanted to dismantle the patriarchy from the inside?
Absolutely not.
I don't think
not.
It's a crime.
Absolutely not.
I'm so glad you
murder is a crime, though.
Murder is a means, and the end is feminism. Stand with me. I've read your shirt. Pro-choice, pro-feminist, pro-murder, pro-cats.
There's no murder on my sure.
There's a big cat, and you know what they're like with little birds.
Murdery.
And I was just the cat amongst the birds in this case.
Very true. Very true. So how did you happen to pass away then?
You know, I've always had kind of a nervous disposition when it comes to Clotin, because he just gives me such chronic anxiety. And you know, I'm just so afraid to test something out on myself in case it is accidentally poison. That I've never been able to figure out something that I hear is called Xanax. I've been working on it, but I was just too afraid to test it myself. And it's difficult to test on a squirrel whether or not Xanax is working. So all the herbs and poultices I'd made, I couldn't tell whether they were working. So yeah, just had a massive anxiety attack, and then I was done. Poof. Yeah, gone. And off stage.
Oi.
So I'm not earning my equity card with that.
No.
Less than, it was like 2 monologues total.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare.
I think it's 3 scenes.
Yeah.
It's like an under 5 for a Shakespeare play.
Do you see why I was so angry about the patriarchy?
All right, I get it. Yeah, there's a lot of patriarchy. Yeah. Especially because the play's named Cymbeline. He's in 2 scenes.
Yeah.
What kind of a man's name is Cymbeline? I'm sorry. Well, I actually have a question for the two of you, and I hope that's permitted.
It is. Sure, why not?
Dialogue. If it's between, and you know, I was dying off stage when they were being introduced, so their names aren't always familiar to me. Avaragus and Guderius?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
If you had to have one, which would it be?
I know my answer.
then you go, because my answer is they appear to be slightly interchangeable in the text, as far as I can tell.
You're wrong. You're
listening. I can't.
Especially in a darkened room, am I right? Lights are low. Who are you?
Guderius is good at war and tough. And Avaragus holds back and is a little bit more bookish and just wants to help. So which one do I want?
I honestly don't know, though.
I guess. I am Avaragus.
Yeah, so do you want to get
with
Guderius? Who am I going to go for?
Guderius.
No, I'll go for the bookish one.
Oh, we're all mixed up.
Oh, it's backwards.
I never knew that I could cause such conflict without the use of any kind of poison. Delightful.
I think I would go for Guderius, because he would keep me on my toes.
Yeah.
And I would be like, no, you should stop. Whereas with Avaragus, we'd both get locked on.
Right. And I'm already Guderius, so somebody else needs to calm me down.
That's fair.
Fair enough. Well, thank you.
Of course.
Cool, we each get one. Question. Nailed it.
And I had to have Cymbeline.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you think Belarius was hot? He's pretty old.
Oof.
But in the day. He's a war hero.
I remember. Why do you think he really got banished?
His monologue.
I wasn't that young.
His monologue reminded me of Hermione in Winter's Tale.
Which was his monologue?
The one where he was talking about his first monologue, where he comes out and says,
with the voice,
I was Spanish and here I am and whatever, and I thought it was a woman for a while. It's a little sometimes difficult to tell gender in these plays, because the name...
And in a darkened room.
And in a... Yes, but think about it. Cymbeline? I didn't think Cymbeline was going to be the king.
I know.
I thought Cymbeline was going to be the woman.
Yeah.
So, I agree. It needs to be renamed something way better.
It should be named Imogen.
I still think the queen should have been called Cymbeline.
True.
And not just because I was the heroine.
You know, it would be really interesting to do this play, but gender swap the queen and Cymbeline. Because it's such a different message if it's a man plotting to murder a woman.
That's actually what we're going to talk about.
So, today for our technical aspect, I just wanted to talk a little bit about who uses what weapon and why.
Poison is a woman's weapon.
Right. So oftentimes, poison is used by women. But there are times when the men use it, but they're usually, like, really bad people and sometimes could be construed as cowards. Like, Claudius kills both Hamlet's father and he tries to kill Hamlet with poison.
Mm.
And it's because he uses subterfuge because he's, like, kind of an evil dude. Another thing I found out is when they did staged fights and, like, deaths and stuff, they used in Elizabethan Jacobean times, they use, like, real animal parts as props. So, like, it would be, like, sheep's blood and guts that they were, like, throwing onto the stage, which is crazy. So that would really set the scene of those times. And we're about to read Titus Andronicus next. Oof. Which, do you know about it?
Yeah, I've read it before.
Oh, dope. I didn't know that.
Do you have any... Sheeps must have been cowering in the distance, knowing yeah. that they were putting on Titus Andronicus. You hear
little sheep teeth chattering when they heard Titus was on. The swords and fighting are often very masculine. Because you got even, like, penis imagery. Mm-hmm. You got all sorts of stuff there. And pretty much every battle is between men. There's a couple times women fight, like Joan of Arc, and I think Viola draws a sword at one point in Twelfth Night, but she doesn't use it. Everyone that dies of execution or war is pretty much only in the political plays. So even though we have, like, war, like in this one, most of it is, like, King John and Henry IV and all that.
Well, what was the one that we read? Wasn't it one of the Henrys where the son kills the father and the father kills the son?
Yeah, that was Henry VI, part three.
Yeah.
And then suicide, it, like, bevels between both sexes because it's really more about when you've lost all hope. But it is mostly the women because they feel like they have less power. It's when the women feel totally out of power. So that's, like, Ophelia, Juliet. Mm. But then with the men's side, it's, like, Brutus does it because he lost so heavily on his side. And when men were really shamed or lost their love, so like Romeo, Mark Antony because he lost Cleopatra, and then Othello because he's so ashamed that he killed Amelia.
Well, would you consider Cleopatra's death full suicide with loss of power?
Hers was more of an alpha move. Hers was more of a, I'm not going to be taken. Because Cleopatra does have the asp bite her, but it's because she's got a great asp on her. Yeah, she does have a great asp. She had three.
You always need a backup asp. Auxiliary, if you will.
An AA.
Yeah, I think she was an AA, actually. But I guess I wasn't supposed to say that. But yeah, I do think that that's one of the few times that suicide is an alpha move.
Yeah.
Instead of shame or lack of power.
Right.
It's sort of whatever that gesture is where people thrust their hands down to their crotches.
Yeah. Totes.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it is. People don't talk much in purgatory. We mostly just watch HBO.
I mean, sounds like great to me.
It's fantastic. Have you ever seen 6 Feet Under?
No, I need to watch it.
It's very interesting. And it's always on HBO.
I like it. Yeah, Poison has always been known as a woman's
work.
Weapon. And in late Victorian times, so a few hundred years more down the road, it was always kind of rumored when men died mysteriously that their wives poisoned them. There are very few cases of this actually being the truth, but I read a really interesting book about one. It's called Death of the Priory, if anyone wants to check it out. And it was a woman who poisoned her husband because she had no power left and anything, and he was slowly, not intentionally, but slowly killing her through constantly getting her pregnant, and she kept miscarrying and being like, I can't do this. Just went, well, it's me or him. So, poison is woman's work.
Men.
The other thing I wanted to say is, indirectly, women use words as a weapon as well.
Yes, always.
And when women do it in Shakespeare, it's cursing. So, like, we have Margaret and Richard III cursing.
Yeah.
We have Constance in King John cursing. And what I was coming up, what I realized today when I was thinking about it is men do the same thing, but with them it's not cursing. With men it's slandering because it's killing the reputation of the woman, which in turn can kill her. Like Hero.
Right. Much ado. Exactly.
And I have to say, as much as I pity the poor fool Imogen, and as much as she was just a blight on my life all the time, she doesn't deserve to have someone go overseas and then start talking about her sex life. That's not fair.
True.
Especially when she hasn't had to, you know, hasn't had an orgasm yet. She should have an orgasm and then be slandered overseas.
That would be at least fair.
Yeah.
Is that what you told Ophelia?
Well, I had told her, you know, simmer down. Maybe he's going through a phase. Just see if you can get, you can knock a few out before he finally goes mental. But she didn't have the patience for it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, suicide. She'd lost power. And being stuck in that castle, I would too.
Because that was my question as to whether you really had an anxiety attack or whether you did test out something on yourself and it didn't go well.
Well, I'll tell you this. I had some things that I was almost ready to test. And I got desperate to the point where I thought, it's now or never, and Clotten's on my actual last nerve. And I think by that point I'd realized, even if he's not, like, even if this isn't going to work, and even if he's going to somehow be fine, and, like, my right. little angel's going to come back, he won't have raped some woman again, and everything's going to be all right. I was at least thinking, okay, if this goes a bit all right, you know, he'll have come back home, he'll be safe here with his stepdad, everything's going to be fine. And then it sort of occurred to me as there was the burning sensation, as there was, like, the problems going on, and I started feeling like, oh, this anxiety's not getting any less. I might have a heart attack. Wait, what did I put in this tincture? And then Cornelius comes bursting in, and then everyone wants to hear about whether I have a deathbed confession. I'll tell you what, when you're on your deathbed, you don't get to say, this is my deathbed. It's just wherever you happen to be lying. You look a bit pale, and then everyone starts clamoring around you saying, deathbed, deathbed, give us a confession. So I was like, right.
You just laid it all out.
So I just said, okay, let's start the beginning here. And just went for it, because then even if I did live, I'd just climb out the window. I'd just run off to Rome, find Iacomo, see how he's doing.
Nice.
Wait, he lived, right? Because I was...
He did.
I was dying at the time, so I couldn't hear what was happening.
Yeah. Posthumus was like... ready to kill him, and then he's like,
okay,
no, I'm going to give you mercy.
Because he was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, I would have just climbed out the window and run to
climbed into him.
So there is a modern day adaptation of this that you were showing me the trailer for.
I'm dying to see it. I tried to get myself to see it before this podcast, but I didn't have time. But it came out about 3 years ago. It did the festival circuit for a while. It doesn't have great reviews, but that's probably because they use real Shakespeare language. And people may have not been expecting that, and it's not a very well-known play.
And the plot's a little crazy.
And who are they, Baz Luhrmann?
But I haven't seen it, but the trailer is the coolest trailer for a Shakespeare movie I've ever seen in my life. When it came out 5 years ago, I got so excited. I showed it to everyone I knew and was waiting for this thing to come out and never came out in theaters, but you can rent it online and it looks really great. So give it a try. I'm going to. But it has, like, Ethan Hawke, Ed Harris, Dakota Johnson.
Penn Badgley.
Who's the
John
guy?
John Leguizamo, Anton Yelchin.
John Legs.
He only speaks the truth, so. That's pretty much the only one as far as I know. Should we read a scene?
Absolutely.
I'd love to.
So, Act 1, Scene 5. This is the first time we see the Queen. And she's talking to her ladies about going and getting her some ingredients and some herbs and flowers. And then she starts talking to Cornelius, the doctor, about something she had asked him to get.
Whilst yet the dew is on the ground, gather those flowers. Make haste. Who has the note of them?
I, madam.
Dispatch. Now, Master Doctor, have you brought those drugs?
Pleaseth, your highness. I hear they are, madam. But I beseech your grace, without defense, my conscience bids me ask, wherefore you have commanded of me those most poisonous compounds which are the movers of a languishing death, but though slow, deadly.
I wonder, doctor, thou asked me such a question. Have I not been thy pupil long? Hast thou not learned me how to make perfumes, distill, preserve? Yea, so that our great king himself doth woo me oft for my confections, having thus far proceeded, unless thou think'st me devilish. It's not meet that I did amplify my judgment in those other conclusions. I will try the forces of these thy compounds on such creatures as we count not worth the hanging, but none human, to try the vigor of them. and apply allayments to their act, and by them gather their several virtues and effects.
Your Highness shall from this practice but make hard your heart. Besides, the seeing these effects will be both noisome and infectious.
Oh, content thee. Here comes a flattering rascal. Upon him will I first work. He's for his master, an enemy to my son. How now, Pisanio? Doctor, your service for this time is ended. Take your own way.
I do suspect you, madam, but you shall do no harm.
Hark thee, a word.
Beautiful. There it begins.
Thank you so much for coming all the way from Purgatory and joining us.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. It's really rare that I get like a proper bus pass out. It's just, obviously, it takes forever to wait for paperwork down there. But it's really nice to be out. So thank you for letting me into your adequate home.
You're welcome.
Yes. And on what I assume is a multi-million listener podcast. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, we are very famous.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yes. I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Deuces, peasants!
So those are often very masculine. When...
Did you know I recast one night with all four of my
characters? Oh my god. Oh my god. She's obsessed. She interrupted our podcast for 40 minutes once and told about how she'd cast it.
Dude, do you know that bad casting is my favorite game to play on long drives? Because I think about who would be the world's worst of each character of every movie and play that we've ever been familiar with.
Have you ever watched Face Off?
Do you know who would be my yes. world's worst Viola? Paris Hilton.
Do you know that there are real tears in my eyes right now? From joy.